Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pajarine Nirvichesha Sunyavadi Skatyade Satarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The respected audience, dear devotees, the week has come to the end, which is the beginning of a life. Yes, a life in Krishna consciousness very much has to do with an ongoing process of purification and, for that matter, transformation. Those of us who have gotten the merciful idea to do such a week are happily exhausted. Exhausted because one tries to give his best, and happy because, at least for myself, who was not an, let me say, a lecturer with a distance, but a very involved person, I can say I have learned a lot. It worked for me, so therefore I'm happy. In this session, all of us, that means Bhujan Prabhu and Jagatarini Mataji, myself, will not talk so much. We will only see ourselves as introducers to your own talk. We will request you in a little while to share with a group of devotees what you feel you can share in answer to the question, what touched you the most during this week? I will try to reflect on this question in a personal way. What did touch me the most during this week? I have 3 points to mention, and they all have to do something with what I call transformation. In my own language, my own personal life as a devotee. Transformation for me is something which has to do with the heart. Something which you cannot fake. Something which either takes place and then spreads through your whole being, or something which is only a mental concept and does not touch the heart and will not help you at the time when you need it. I wish to tell you my favorite transformation story in just a few sentences. It applies a devotee who had died by the bite of a cobra. He was only young, maybe 8 to 10 years old, and as it is done in Bengal, children are not really cremated when they die so young. They are put on a float of bamboo into the Ganga and then given a river cremation. In Germany we have an ocean cremation, where the dead body is given to the ocean, but this is the Ganga cremation. One puts the body into the loving waves of Mother Ganga, who carries the dead person. So, Hare Krishna. This dead body was floating down. It was early in the morning, and Sharanga Thakur took his bath, who had been given the order by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The first person you see in the morning, you make him your disciple and give him the sacred mantra. And as we are informed, the dead body of this child was floating against the happily bathing Sharanga Thakur, who was in the darkness taking his bath in the Ganga. And Sharanga didn't know what it was. He just moved this floating thing, whatever it was, towards the bank of the river, finished his ablutions, and went on the bank as the sun rose. Now he could see what he had pushed gently on the sandy banks of Mother Ganga. It was a dead body. He remembered his promise to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the day before, and he understood, I have to give him initiation. So he, with great faith in the mantra, went to the dead body and spoke in his right ear the Gopal Gayatri. This was how initiation were given at that time. Upon the sacred syllables of the mantras entering into the ear of the boy showed remarkable signs of life. His eyes began to flush. He opened his eyes and he looked around, saw Sharanga Thakur, and offered his obeisances. Sharanga Thakur instructed the boy at the details of chanting the mantra, and later the boy became his devoted disciple and was called Murari Chaitanya. There's a lovely little episode which we sannyasis like very much. His father came with his wife. They had, prior to the death of Murari Chaitanya, arranged for a sacred marriage of their son. They now wanted to take the boy and bring him to the yagyic fire. But Murari said, how can I leave my father? I can never leave my father. My father is he who has given me life. This is Sharanga Thakur. He has just resurrected me from the death. And I have to stay with him. And in this way, his father from his previous life and his wife went back to the village and said, the logic of our son is true. He has to stay now with his new father, and he cannot marry at this moment. Murari Chaitanya subsequently became a very fearless devotee. His transformation from the kingdom of death rendered him fearless. It is said that sometimes in great jubilation he would chase after tigers, jump on their backs, and while shouting the names of Gornitai, raced with the tigers, galloped with the tigers over the countryside of Bengal. He played with dangerous cobras, which he put on his lap. And when he needed peace and wanted to be for himself, he just put a stone on his lap and sunk into Mother Ganga, and there stayed on the bottom of Mother Ganga to meditate in silence. He didn't want to be disturbed. Hare Krishna. It's a very good secluded place. But I want to express with these three examples about Murari's life is, after something had happened to him, which was certainly a transformation of his whole existence, his initiation was really an initiation into a new type of life, he became fearless. He recollected that life is eternal, that he is an eternal part of Krishna, and he was full of love for Krishna and became a glorious devotee of the Lord. It's my favorite story because all transformational stories, either in a direct or in an indirect way, have something to do with a new birth. Huh? For initiation, we say an initiated person is a dvija. Dvi means two and ja means birth. His second birth. He has taken a second birth. But all transformation which take place can be considered an awakening into a new understanding and a new life for that matter. I had my birth. I always have my birth in a dramatic way. I don't know, because I'm very sinful maybe and very ordinary person. I was thinking yesterday, tomorrow you will speak about transformation, Satchinandan Swami. Will it be a theoretical lecture or a practical lecture which you give? Up till now, no practical. The practical experience which you have, that it was very nice to sit at the side of Govardhan. So yesterday I went through my experiences and I have collected three jewels which I would like to share with you. Practical jewels. It was really in the first, in my own lecture where I chanted, talked about the holy name, that I realized, wait a minute, this is wonderful. You only need to chant free of offenses. Make your life now a journey, Satchinandan, to become free from all the offenses, to go through the gate of humility into the kingdom of offenseless chanting. This was my first realization. I've spoken many times about the holy name, but chanting, speaking about the holy name here at the sacred site of Giriraj gave me a very nice realization. Another realization which happened happened in the class of Burijan Prabhu, the first class, which very much moved me. The other classes were also very wonderful, and I took notes. But where the moment of realization happened the strongest was in the first class, when Burijan Prabhu was explaining how Krishna is appearing on the stage of the Bhagavatam. I don't know if you remember this, but he appeared when his devotee needed him very, very much, and Arjuna needed him very much, and there were many incidences. Arjuna needed him very much, Uttara needed him very much, Yudhishthira needed him very much, and so on. And Bhishma needed him very much at the time of his departure. And Burijan was explaining everything so nicely and so well researched and with heart and enthusiasm as a real devotee should when he speaks about Krishna. Then there was one part when Krishna appeared before the dying Bhishma. We had heard how merciful Krishna is, but then we heard also how Bhishma remembered him as a very beautiful person, and he remembered his loving exchange with Krishna. So I thought, I certainly qualify for a devotee who is in need, and if Krishna is so kind that he appears before his needy devotees, he will also appear before me. No doubt. And I was very moved, and I stayed on at Giriraj and prayed to Krishna, and it was wonderful. This I entered through hearing the Shastra into another form of appreciation of Krishna, which was very wonderful. And the last thing I would like to share you the thing which touched me very much was yesterday at Surabikund. I very much appreciated Paita also in the walk through Giriraj. But those who know me know that my health is extremely fragile. When I get something, it is really very heavy. I don't have a lot of physical strength with me in this lifetime. The nose was running and the brain was running out with the whiteness of the nose. It was physically difficult to perceive everything because the brain was all in my tissue papers, handkerchiefs. So we were sitting there and our Mataji was explaining so nicely from Ananda Vrindavan Champu about the place. And I imagined how Indra came. He had just created a huge offense. He wanted to kill Krishna and his devotees. Oh, very heavy. And Krishna just forgave him when Surabi prayed on behalf of Krishna. I was sitting at the sacred place, which, as I had told you, had already saved my life one time before. And all of a sudden it happened. It happened unthought. I was just happy to sit and suffer silently. And all of a sudden, the Dham for just a moment lifted its veil, which is covering me all the time. And I saw, this is the mercy place. This is the mercy place. Here you get the mercy. When I finally unfolded my body on the cold steps of Surabikund, I could pray very deeply to Lord Krishna to forgive me. I could pray to Prabhupada, whom I see as an intermediate, like Indra needed Surabi to connect him with Krishna. I need Prabhupada. It was very, very nice. What touched me also as someone who was thinking about this experience and how to make it nice together with Raj Bihari and Burijan and his wife was how nicely you all went into this experience. I was very moved how wonderful every one of you participated and tolerated with the soft western feet, the thorns and whatever was there, and how you were all very eager to absorb Krishna consciousness. This was very touching as a lecturer, because as a lecturer who often lectures two times, three times a day, you sometimes have an audience who is not as enthusiastic to absorb transcendental knowledge. So the devotees were very, you were very good workers. You were digging deep with the spade of your attention to find some treasures. Hare Krishna, I will end here and pass the microphone on. I want to thank you all very, very much for being so kind with me and to just that you came here into the sacred valley of Giriraj Govardhan. And I want to request you, don't go before making a photo, a colored three-dimensional photo, which you cannot buy in any Photoshop. It is a photo where you need the photograph of your heart. You need, please, you look at this vista. Vista means, vista is an English word, hopefully. And you take this in your heart. And whenever you need, you go to the sacred valley of Giriraj and you look at this beautiful mountain, who is clearly from another dimension. The trees are clearly not botanica, erosticos trees, or whatever the Latin name would be for them. I'm making a name up. I don't know these names so well. I don't know them at all. So please take this in your heart and take it with you. And from time to time, when you need. Visit the sacred valley of Giriraj Govardhan. Come here in your mind. Think about the jewels which you have dug up here in this 1 week retreat. Look at them like a little child who looks at his favorite toys. Toys is not the right word, favorite treasures. Turn them around. They will help you at a time of need. Whatever you have understood will help you to go into your life now where the transformation will continue. Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar ki jai. Shri Giriraj Govardhan ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi Hari Hari Bo.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Navasesha Sunyavadi Pishkatite Zatarane Evam Janam Na Prapatitam Prabhavari Kupam Kama Bikamam Marayam Prapatam Prasangam Kritvatma Satsavishinam Bhagavan Grihitam Soham Kitam Nu Vishajayi Tavapati Seva. That verse is a very important verse. Prahlad Maharaj says that verse. He doesn't quote it, we quote it, but he says that verse when Lord Nisringadev speaks to him and asks him what he wants, what benedictions he wants from his life, because Prahlad had pleased Lord Nisringadev, because Prahlad was such a great devotee, and also his prayers themselves pleased Lord Nisringadev. That's actually such an interesting part of the Bhagavatam. Although after Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Nisringadev, Lord Nisringadev was still furious, so furious. His mane was sprinkled with drops of blood, and his mouth was so ferocious, and his ears were pointing like a lion, still so angry. And he had taken Hiranyakashipu's body and thrown it, and he was wearing a garland of intestines. He was still furious, and although some of the demigods offered prayers to Lord Nisringadev to try to calm him down, it wasn't until Prahlad Maharaj came before him and spoke his prayers that Lord Nisringadev's great anger was satisfied and cooled down. So, Lord Nisringadev asked Prahlad to choose any benediction he wanted. And one of the things Prahlad said was this first, Evam Janam Na Prapatitam Prabhavari Kupam Kama Bikamam Manuya Prapatam Prasangam. Kritvatma Sat Surishi. Surishi means the Rishi, the great teacher or devotee amongst the Suras. And Suras means the demigods. So that great teacher amongst the demigods, whose name is Devarshi Narada, Narada Muni, who was the spiritual master of Prahlad Maharaj, he said that, look at what the history of my life. Look at my life. I was heading down the same road as everyone else, desiring sense enjoyment. And that road that I was following leads to a dark and deep well in the fields. And if one falls in a dark covered well in the fields, it is deep, it is steep, and one is hurt, and it is secluded. And no one, even if one cries and cries out, there is no one nearby to help that person. So, practically speaking, although one may not die when he falls in the well, the ultimate result is death. So Prahlad Maharaj said that there I was, walking along, following everyone else, desiring sense enjoyment, and I was headed towards a certain death, a hopeless death, a painful death. But then, this Surishi, this Narada Muni, awarded me transcendental knowledge. He opened my eyes, he forced my eyes open, and he gave me so many things, and therefore, how can I give up his service? So hum kitam, how can I give up his service, Rishina? How can I give up his service? So there are so many sweet jewels that I have at least glimpsed, and some I have tried to put in my pockets, especially this pocket, because it is close to the heart. And some, after I leave, after a few days or a few weeks or a few months, I'll see which ones I drop on the way or which ones I'm actually able to keep. But the one I pray to all the devotees and to Giriraj Govardhan and to the dust of Vrindavan and C.C. Radha Govinda, Govanatai, Radha Shama Sunda, and especially Giriraj, and especially all the devotees, is a renewed and uncovered and free from offense appreciation of Srila Prabhupada and the gifts that he has given me. If you would all pray that on my behalf, I would be forever grateful to you all. Although I have a tendency to, it's not quite a vow, but it's a tendency to never listen to anything that my wife tells me. But yesterday, she said something so nice that I was forced to pay deep attention to it and listen to it and keep it, put it right very close to my heart. And that was when she said that how Prabhupada wrote so, especially for Westerners, and he even presented the Dham for Westerners, so we have to accept the Dham, Sri Vrindavan Dham, on the way that he gave it to us. Not that we can't hear from anyone else or anything like that, but ultimately, at least I will speak for myself, my soham kitam nuvrishraje tavabritya seva. How can I give up his service? And so even though the Dham is so wonderful and although I know that I'm very unqualified, there's a part of me that would just like to wander off into the Dham, just calling out Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. I know I'm not qualified in any way to do that. But yet, how could I give up his service? And that service is preaching. So sometimes I feel the Prabhupada's hand on my on my chador or shirt pulling me back. And when I want, even though I'm not qualified, but a part of me would like to just go wandering off. And sometimes I resent that pull. I really do. I resent that pull. Here he is again. But yet, it is really a loving pull, because I am not qualified. And Prabhupada said, without preaching, and I do trust this, you won't be qualified to actually do bhajan, to actually lovingly serve the Lord at the end of life. So even the Dham, I owe whatever little superficial relationship I have with Sri Vrindavan Dham, I also owe to Prabhupada, because in 1974, Prabhupada told me After you have been preaching for 10 years in Hong Kong, we were in Hong Kong. Oh, we were suffering in Hong Kong, preaching. It was so difficult. We were such little babies and children. And Hong Kong is such a heavy materialistic place. And we were newly married. And we were young and idealistic and everything was smashing us. You know, you go in, when you're young and idealistic, you take off and want to save the world only to find out that not only does the world not want to be saved, but also you yourself really don't want to be saved. And not only that, you're not even qualified to save yourself or anyone else. So it was very, very, very difficult. And yet, after several years of making an attempt, Prabhupada said, after you have been preaching for 10 years, you can go live in Vrindavan. You should go live in Vrindavan. And then, including my years of preaching in Gurukula, which was the only thing, being an ashram teacher is the only thing comparable to preaching in Hong Kong. So difficult. After I was chairman of the GBC for 1 year in 90-something or other, I at the end of my term or sentence, I stood up and said, this was the most difficult thing I ever did, other than being a Gurukula ashram teacher. So Prabhupada said that, and after 10 years of preaching, which included the Gurukula work, almost to the month, I found myself in Vrindavan, having forgotten even Prabhupada's words. So by his mercy, I was able to, and which really carried the mercy of Srimati Radharani, of Radhashyama Sundar, I was able to serve at Krishna Balaram Mandir. So whatever little I have gained is really, in my life really, because I was really heading towards a dark, deep, horrible well of death. And only by Prabhupada's mercy, and I pray that, and I request again that all the devotees pray for me, that I do never forget this, and whatever horrible, offensive attitude I have at times at services, even with Srila Prabhupada, due to my arrogance and pride, it only makes me humble, if anything, realizing what a wretched person I am. And doesn't stand in the way of actually serving him. So this is what it, in my mind, this is a realization that I'm trying to cultivate, how merciful Prabhupada is, and how much he gave us, and how much he gave the world, how much he gave the world, how much he gave us, and anyone who, yes, his great gifts. So each of the jewels that I made my attempt to pocket are Prabhupada's gifts too, and not only Prabhupada's gifts, but without Prabhupada, I wouldn't have had any access to them. One of them, just a few I'd like to mention, that 64-round day was so nice, and the kirtan at night, oh, it was so wonderful. It is what probably we all long for, to be floating above our minds that keep pulling us down into the dualities of the material world. So, by the mercy of Satchinanda Maharaj, the day before, he was putting forth so much tattva, and people were asking tattva questions, and one time he whispered into my ear, he said, never mind, I won't answer the questions, because tomorrow they will realize everything. There won't be any questions. And indeed, especially after the kirtan, perhaps, there were no questions in my mind. And probably no one else had any questions either, because the sweetness was just removed all the difficulties. So that gift, from Maharaj, I'd like to thank him for that jewel. And the tattva also, but especially the practical application of that. And then, having the honor to speak. So Prabhupada, at my initiation, he gave me the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So again, I have to offer my thanks to him while thanking also his servants. And then, while speaking the Bhagavatam, that was also so much Prabhupada's gift. He worked so hard to print the Bhagavatam, to publish the Bhagavatam, to distribute the Bhagavatam. Very, very powerful, transcendental book. Having lectured on the book quite a lot in the last several years, I've seen so much more that it really is a transcendental book. And I do recommend that everyone study this book carefully. And there's so many ways to read, but if you're not if you're not lecturing a lot, but if you just want to deepen your own realizations, at least read that way that we presented. Not at least, because I would like to do that every day as well, but just try to gain something from the Bhagavatam every day. Devote at least 15 minutes or a half hour a day to meditatively be in touch with this transcendental literature. This time I had the experience of having to listen quite carefully, because I was speaking and really feeling so many times before the lectures so empty and incapable. And when I was preparing the lectures, because I have to do my part of preparing it, but just always at the last minute, Krishna gave me the key that would connect the lectures, which was the center of the lecture, which was what I really wanted to say from the core of my heart. And he gifted me with that by the mercy of Giriraj, every time. And I'd be in so much anxiety and uncertainty, and Jagtwini always would have to leave the room and leave me alone because it was so hot in the room. But every time, by divine grace, I was given a little something that allowed me to speak according to my capacity, which is quite limited. So that really touched me again. Even though I can't say I spoke well, certainly, but I can say that whatever well was in there, that was a gift of not from me, but from above, if anything was in there. And then also at Sarabhi Kund, that was so nice also. I also was touched at Sarabhi Kund by Jagtwini's Mataji's presentation, by the rowdy Brijbasis, who even had to sat and listen quite quietly, considering who they were. They were really listening. Braja Bihari told them, "Guruma is speaking." Oh. Yes, I told them she has a big stick, so we have to be careful. So that was really so nice. Also, how just there, even though in devotional life, and I know for myself, I've made so many mistakes in my life, continuously, practically speaking. One of the tricks I've learned is to show up, to still be there, to keep going, and what gets despite everything, and even if one gets knocked down or trips or a thousand times a day, even one just has to get up 1,001 times. and that was very nicely brought out by both Jagtwini, that Krishna provides so many nice facilities to remove our mistakes, even though we hear about aparadha is the worst of all mistakes, Vaishnava aparadha, Guru aparadha. And there's still facility to remove those. So what a nice process. So I'd like to thank that for everyone. And this is also Prabhupada's grace, because although he didn't particularly take all the devotees around, he took the devotees around to a few places, but he wants this. He wants us to carefully have the experience of the Dham and receive its benefits. And, of course, in his society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, without that, how would devotees from all over the world be sitting here at the foot of Govardhan? So that is such a grace. And his society, ISKCON, is such a it's unique in so many ways, but it's not unique in other ways. And one of them is that it's being in it is so difficult in so many ways, because you're You know, it's all, you know, between the individuals, like all the stones being in a polishing machine, and just rubbing against each other and getting polished in that way, but very painful as all our rough edges and pointed edges rub against each other. And then there's institutional problems and this problem and this difficulty and this limitation, and only if they were organized in this way, and only if we were doing this and this and that and this and that. And sometimes it's so frustrating. But yet, because it's Prabhupada's ISKCON, although there are so many things that we can even hate about it, but yet there are so many things that we love about it. And the most lovable things, other than the facilities that it gives, is it gives the facilitation for the association of devotees. One can't even speak the Bhagavatam without devotees who are eager to hear. They pull things that one doesn't even know one has out of one's heart by their mercy. Krishna, you become an instrument. And I think this is what every devotee actually wants in the core of his heart, and is the most satisfying thing, is simply to become an instrument of Krishna, to be used by Krishna, who we are individually according to our capacity and our situation. Just to be used by Krishna in his service is the most satisfying thing. So that happens also by the grace of the devotees. And that has happened by the grace of so many devotees and my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. And of course it doesn't stop there, because he passed it on to his spiritual master, his grace, and then ultimately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's grace and Radha and Krishna. And one last point, One thing shocked me a few years ago in a positive way when I read it in the Krishna Samhita by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He described, much to my surprise, how the difference between one higher stage of prema and another higher stage of prema was faith. Ado shraddha. The most primary thing, the first thing required, is faith. But the difference between one level of high thing and the higher level of the high thing is another faith. Is faith. So, on one side, I'd like to say that we have to be very careful, because faith is the root and it's the top. Our trusting Krishna, our surrender to Krishna, our taking shelter of Krishna. Faith is everything. So on one side, I'd like to say we should be very, very careful in dealing with devotees and their faith. Faith in Guru, faith in Vaishnavas, faith in Prabhupada, faith in the institution even. Faith in the Dham, faith in Krishna, ultimately being in Krishna's hands. We have to be very careful and not subtly or grossly hurt people's faith, because it's everything. So I found that this retreat helped my faith in the devotees, in the holy name, in the Dham, in the Bhagavatam, and in the process of Krishna consciousness. So all these gifts I would like to thank you all for. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namani. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nivasesha Sunyavadi Paskatya Desitarani. So this morning when I was thinking about something to say as my realization from this experience, the first thing that came in my mind was something that this retreat reminded me of, and that was my own personal experience of when Srila Prabhupada would come to, when we were living in Australia, when Srila Prabhupada would come and stay for 3 or 4 or 5 days. And I remember when, for myself personally, prior to his coming, I'd be a little bit nervous because I was well aware of all the things that I wasn't able to do correctly, and his high standards, and how my Krishna consciousness was fairly theoretical. And then as he was closer to his coming, I would try not to think about it. And then he would arrive. And as soon as the plane touched down, that empty feeling that I couldn't quite locate him in my mind, in my consciousness, I couldn't quite locate what it felt like to be with him. As soon as you see him, it all would come rushing back, what it was like, who he was. It became all fresh and real to me, whereas it had become vague. And then initially there'd be a tremendous euphoric feeling just to be in his company again and to feel safe, and everything was there and I was there and it was very wonderful, and wait for him to smile at you and he'd look and he'd certainly smile and you'd feel like, oh, everything's wonderful. And then the next day he would come in and he would sit on the Vyasasan. And when he sat on the Vyasasan, he would start to lecture. And his lecturing would be from the absolute platform. And again, that uncomfortable feeling that I had been feeling right before he came would sort of, in an eerie way, it would start returning. Because everything that he would say, he'd say it from the full, realized, pure, unconditional, fully surrendered to Krishna platform. And I would be, I would find myself exposed in all the different ways that I actually didn't have faith, or I couldn't actually apply, or I wasn't living up to the standards of what it was to be his disciple. And so for me, personally, then I would gradually become more and more depressed. It was like a flame, that when you light the candle, I remember when Satchinandan Maharaj lit the big candle, and at first it flew up, and then it goes way, 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 way down until you're not quite sure if it's even there. And then again, it slowly, slowly, slowly builds up. So it was like that, and I'd find myself just everywhere I looked, all I could see was my own faults and my own reluctance even to change. And then, as the process of a visit with Srila Prabhupada would go on for me, I'd start thinking, okay, so you better accept it. That's what you're like. Okay, you can't do this, okay this, okay this. And there would come, as Maharaj was talking about, that process of acceptance, or as my husband was talking about, the process of acceptance that, okay, so that is where I am. I'm not all these wonderful things I thought I was, and so on and so forth. That's what I am. And then slowly, slowly, as the few days would go by, almost with an incredible intensity though, I'd come to the point of, I would call it like surrender, where I was ready to accept that this was really what I was and I wasn't what I wanted to be. And then there would always be one moment where you'd get some direct exchange with Srila Prabhupada, as well as the Vyasasan impression, where there'd be very much warmth and encouragement given. And then by the time he'd leave, I'd feel very much cleaned out. It was like when you you do a spring clean and you clean out all the cupboards and you open them up again and everything's in the right place and looks very nice, and you think, I'll always keep it like this. Immediately you start to use everything again and it changes. But I would feel very, very much cleaned out and very calm, and then he would leave. And part of me, of course, would be thinking, oh no, I don't want him to leave because all these things will become disordered again. But there would be this very clear sense that something had been achieved. And then I remember that Srila Prabhupada explained somewhere in Krishna book, I remember reading that he explained that, or imperceptibly, that means you can't actually know what's happening. Imperceptibly one makes advancement in the association of pure devotees. So I had that personal experience here also, that as the is talking about the glories of the holy name, even the chanting of the 64 rounds, which was, I also even experienced a happiness, but my mind would be saying, but you'll never do this again, I know you. I'm going, no, no, leave me alone. And on, and then the Bhagavatam, and thinking, oh, so high, so ideal, I can't do anything. But then that point comes where you say, okay, all of this is transcendentally beyond me, but I'm not going to go away. I'm going to continue with the process, and this is what I have to look forward to. So this is why I have to hear these things, because this is what I have ahead. The other thing that struck me was yesterday at Peta, when I found myself explaining to you about the four categories of relationships that you see here in this world, also the swapaksha, or those who are your intimates, and then the surit, or the friends, the neutral parties, and then those who are the opposite, opposed to you, on the opposite camp, so to speak. I was thinking how when you come out into a situation like this where everyone's come for the same purpose, everyone has something they're working to try to improve or develop, and we're all in the same circumstances together, we all become swapaksha. We all become intimately, closely related. And this is actually the wonderful thing about Parikram, that on the Parikram, there's an intimacy between the devotees that you couldn't possibly, it would be improper even to maintain in a temple atmosphere, because it could degenerate into something else. But even the male, the female, everything high, low, everything, that's all not considered on Parikram in the same way. So this is one of the gifts that I've found of the Holy Dhamma, that we all become swapaksha. And it's such a relief, because we all know in our day-to-day lives that we deal with all four classes. And we have to deal with them all. We have to deal with people who don't like us, who disagree with us, who think that maybe what we think is okay, but they're not sure. And those who say, no, I think that's nice. And then those who are very close with us. We're all dealing with all of these things together. But to have this opportunity to be dealing only in this very, very intimate way with a small group of devotees is very, very appreciative, and that impression stays with one. So much so that when you see each other again somewhere on the journey of life, you all go, oh! And you remember something from that experience. So I was very much appreciating that with all the devotees. And the other thing that struck me was that the subject matter that we were hearing, especially from Maharaj, in terms of chanting, it's so elevated, because it's beyond the platform of offenseless chanting. And all of us must admit that we find ourselves still struggling to greater or lesser degrees at various moments of our life with our japa and with our sadhana and with these offenses. So it's not that exactly, for me at least, these subject matters are just within my grasp or possible for me to experience, but a hope is there. And I have found in my Krishna consciousness by hearing of these very elevated transcendental subject matters, my personal experience is that at first when I heard that there were so many higher levels to devotional service, I thought, oh, I'm going to hear this and I'm going to attain something very high and wonderful from this. And I noticed to my surprise that what I did find as the result was, by hearing about the top, it's as if something became cleared on the very bottom. And it was very strange, because problems that were unresolvable by me on a very low level, different character traits or circumstances or so forth, they started setting into place in a more favorable manner so that I could move further upwards. And I was always waiting for something to come about up here, that I would get some divine revelation or something. But I found that the family situation was easier, or it was easier for me to do this, or I didn't dislike these people as much, or so on and so forth. My mind was calmer. And I thought, these are trivial things. I'm waiting for something to happen here. But I began to realize that, yes, these are trivial things, but these are the sub-offenseless level functions that I'm struggling with. And until these things are actually reduced in their impact and their intensity, they're like rocks, not Giriraj Shilas, but rocks that are binding me here, and I have to be released somewhat from them before I can begin to take steps upwards. So I was trying to remind myself of that here, that don't worry if you think, oh, I can never achieve this. Just be happy, because something will happen on the lower levels that will ease your journey towards these things that are now above that platform that you can't at this stage conceive of going beyond. And one's attachment to Krishna, naturally, even before one can attain to a deep quality of Shraddha, is increased and increased by being here in the Dhamma. And the other thing that came to my mind was this idea of transformation. Because when we first came and Maharaj was mentioning transformation, because my nature is, as my husband will attest, is to always, if someone says you should do something, I think, oh, I can't, I won't. Because they said I shall, I definitely won't. And to go in the opposite direction. So some reverse psychology is needed with a temperament like that. And so I came here thinking transformation, oh, others can transform, I won't transform. I know I won't transform. It's not possible and very negative. But I realized as I was thinking about this transformation that yes, I can see signs of transformation even already. If I shift to a more positive frame of mind. But I also know that transformation is not something that happens overnight. I remember when I was young, my family, a Christian family, we were Australian, of course, and Australians are quite simple. They're not as complex or intricate as either Europeans or, it's definitely not Americans. And my mother used to take me to these big American evangelists would come. And, you know, there was Billy Graham and others who were sort of famous over the years in the Christian, community, and they'd come to Australia and they'd set everything up very theatrically, and they'd have this sort of a theatre setting, and they'd always have an organ because we have the harmonium and organ, and they would give this very sort of powerful presentation about giving your life to Jesus and surrendering to Jesus. And I remember every bit of it, I'd be moved. I'd be trying to hold back and trying to hold back. But through the whole thing, I'd be feeling so guilty. Yes, yes, I've got to give my life to Jesus. And at the end, they'd play the organ. And they were so theatrical and so expert. And they'd say, now, we want you all to just close your eyes and sit there. And if you feel the call, just stand up and walk down the aisle and blah, 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 blah. And they'd give this whole sort of scenario. Then they'd play the organ and they'd sing this very sweet song and it was all calling, pulling the heart. And every time we went, I'd be up and like hypnotized and I'd be crying and crying and down the aisle and I'd get down the aisle and there'd be a part of me saying, don't do this again, you know, but just the theatricalness of it would draw me there. And then they'd say, and behind this curtain, there's someone who can help you. And I'd open the curtain and go, and there'd be some little old lady there or somebody, and she'd say, oh yes, we have this Bible study course, you know, only costs this much money, and we'll send you this and this and this. And I'd be saying, but what about the fact that I'm so bad? You know, I've heard all this and I'm so bad. What are you going to do about that? And they'd say, you know, you read this Bible thing, it's going to solve all your problems, everything's here. Just take this text. And I would feel so cheated and defeated, because when I got there, I found there wasn't like this. It was all leading to this magic cure, and it wasn't. I already had that Bible thing. I'd been and done this before. And so I would have this very strong wariness about being drawn by the emotional mood and presentation towards something that when I got there, I'd be disappointed. But I found that despite those problems of the mind, I've realized that transformation is a gradual thing, like waves. It goes up high and then you go down, you go up, you go down. And the cows are very important for transforming. Just seeing the cows at Govardhan is so real. It's so much more real than all the problems that we conceive of in our minds. And they're just peacefully wandering and walking. So the impressions that we get here are making that transformation possible. And if like myself, there are others who are not finding immediate upliftment, we should all know that we will be transformed just by this continuous process of hearing, associating together, hearing together, chanting as much as we can, and being by the side of Giriraj Govardhan in the association of people who also want to be here. And one last thing is that there was one time in Puri I went to one temple of one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, and someone was explaining to me about his character, his quality, and they explained that he was a very humble man. He didn't have a very large following, but he had this perception that he didn't make any disciples. If anyone said to him, "Oh Maharaj, how many disciples do you have?" he would say, "I haven't got any disciples." But they'd say, "But you have disciples." And he'd say, "No, I haven't got any disciples," he said. Because he said, "I like so much to speak the Bhagavatam. And if there's no one there to speak to, then I can't speak it. So I don't think of these people as my disciples. They're my gurus, because if they didn't come, I wouldn't have any opportunity to become purified." So that struck me at the time, how this is a very safe way for one to avoid any offense or any false pride, to see that if there's no one to hear when you speak, the inspiration to speak is not so much aroused, and so therefore one should thank as much the audience as the person who's speaking. So I would like to, as Maharaj was saying, like to thank everyone who's here in this Svapaksha group for their companionship and association, and for the benefits that I've gained from being here for this week. Thank you.